There's also the idea of trivial versus vital interest. So why do people eat meat? Because it tastes good. So what's a vital interest? Well, vital interest is something like wanting to live or not wanting to suffer. So the difference between a trivial interest like, oh, I want that burger because it really tastes good, versus like the cow's idea, like, I just want to hang out here and eat grass. I don't want to be killed. Or the veal calf that says, oh, I wish I could turn around in my pen, or I weren't wallowing in my own filth. And so even though we're different kinds of beings, you have the human interest is trivial. It has to do with taste buds and something tasting good, whereas the animal's interest isn't just basically being able to move around and enjoy its food and not wallow in its own filth and live in darkness for its short, pathetic life. A speciesism. So Peter Singer coined the term speciesism, and this is an unjustified attitude towards members of another species akin to racism or sexism. And Singer says this doesn't mean that you have to give animals the same rights that human beings do. It just means that you can't give them different rights without a justification. So it doesn't mean that a horse has a right to take the bar exam, for example, right? But it does mean that, and it also might not even mean that you can't like ride a horse and maybe even like use a riding crop of the horse, because the horse has sort of a thick hide and the horse maybe likes to be ridden and so on. But it does mean that you can't take the horse and abuse it and cause it needless pain and maybe beat the horse mercilessly to take another example of another animal have two dogs and have them fight to the death, right? That's something which you wouldn't do that with human beings, but with animals, they have an interest not to suffer. And so even though a horse doesn't have an interest to take the bar exam, a horse does have an interest not to be beaten mercifully. A dog might not have an interest to surf the internet, but a dog has an interest not to have to fight to the death. Let me call it a video here. This up, go back to our class. Not here. I wonder if I close that out. Darn PCs. Let me call this up here. There's a video that I have in Moodle that is a little graphic. It's narrated by Paul McCarthy about factory farms. You can look at. Here's a sort of something that gets the same point across, but in a more humorous way. It's called The Matrix. It's funny. I think the reference here is getting a little old. The Matrix came out some time ago. So for those of you who haven't seen The Matrix, it's a takeoff on the film The Matrix. It's down here in week 9. And it's a vegetarian animal rights handouts includes The Matrix. And let's go full screen here. Can I do that? There we go.
Leo.
Who are you? And how did you know my name?
I have movies. And I know a lot about you. Have you heard of the Matrix?
The Matrix?
Do you want to know what it is?
Okay.
The Matrix is all around you, Leo. It is the story we tell. tell ourselves about where our meat and animal products come from. This family farm is a fantasy. Take the blue pill and stay here in fantasy. Take the red pill and I'll show you the truth.
So, done with humor, but I think that the point about, and they mentioned this bit about antibiotics there, which is also another worry about factory farms. And I'm not sure, is this sort of a conspiracy of agribusiness to stomp out family farms? It seems like more it's a natural evolution of our economy, where it's become much more centralized. You have wider channels of distribution, you have modern production techniques, and so along with, where do your shoes come from? Did they come from a cobbler? No, they come from a shoe factory. We have international global markets now, and we have mass manufacturers of goods, including meat. But when you think about what's required to mass manufacture meat products, and what you have to do to animals in order to get the vast quantities required at a price people are willing to pay, then you start to get into moral issues. Let me just come back here. There's an argument you can make about free-range animals. So there are opportunities, particularly if you're out. I'm not sure about the Eugene Springfield area. I know that, but you're not too far away from outlying areas. So I suppose you can go down the freeway a little bit. I know around Cottage Grove there are places that people can go, Cottage Grove and Crestwell areas, to get farm fresh eggs. And those again are with people that have free-range chickens that are able to walk around a pen. They don't spend all their lives in cages. And so if you think that the cruelty aspect is the most important aspect of moral aspect of meat eating, then you can get collect eggs from a place where the animals are treated well. And there are also free-range animals. You can buy free-range meat in a store. Of course, it's going to be more expensive, but that's a sort of intermediate point that some people take. So one question is, if a being is incapable of abstract or sophisticated reasoning, does that mean we can treat it any way we like? So often people will say, look, animals lack the capacity to reason. They are not moral beings. They don't have, and because they're incapable of making moral judgments, therefore they can't have moral rights. If you think about that, it's a couple of counter analogies here. But think about, say, a mentally retarded person, or a person in a psychiatric ward who's institutionalized. If that person has become irrational, if they're either curled up in a ball in the corner, if they have the mental capacity of a 2-year-old, does that mean we can treat that person any way we like? There are some animals like chimpanzees and dolphins, who have the consciousness of a toddler. They can use language and tools, and they have the same level of sophistication as a 2 or 3 or 4 year old human being, and even have greater problem solving ability. And is it abstract reasoning? Is that really what gives you rights? And think about this. Suppose there were a race of aliens who found human beings to be very tasty. And imagine further that those aliens were of a level higher than us than we are to animals. So there's sort of a parallel greatness there. So as we are to animals, so the alien species are to us. They see us as lower animals. Does that mean that it would be okay to treat us any way they like, to put us in factory farms? I think if you had, our alien overlords came and they put us in factory farms and treat us the way we treat other animals, we'd cry foul. We'd say, hey, I have my rights, I'm a human being. But what do we do to animals? We treat them in cruel and inhumane ways. Why? Because they taste good, and because it makes the meat cheap, and because we don't care about their suffering. And so if you think that you wouldn't want to be treated that way by higher species, it seems that you would have to say it's wrong for you to treat a lower species in a similar fashion. There's also, if you think about the kinds of animals that people eat, there was a big hubbub about horses being used as meat because Americans love horses. They're related to the American West. We have horse racing and competitions and so on. And people say, no, you can't eat a horse. That's like a horse is a majestic animal. But there are plenty of other countries. The French like horse meat, and they see it just as a farm animal that people eat. And it seems as it's a sort of irrational respect for the horse, but not for the cow. And what's the difference between a horse and a cow? The cow maybe is not quite as smart as the horse, but they're sort of in the same category. And then look at, say, dogs. In Southeast Asia, people eat dogs. In the Far East, in China, people will eat dogs. The president himself even said that he had eaten dogs growing up in Indonesia. But Americans will say, oh, no, the dog is a pet. A dog, would you eat your dog? Would you eat your neighbor's dog? Most people will say, no, that's disgusting. But somehow the cow is okay and the pig is okay. And you think about a pig. People sometimes now they keep these pot-bellied pigs as pets. But there's no distinction in intelligence and level of consciousness and capacity to feel between a dog and a pig. So, and this is especially if you notice, like, say, I used to have a pug dog. So you compare a pug with, like, a pot-bellied pig, and, you know, they not only look the same, but they have the same you know, level of consciousness as far as their senses, the way their brains work. And so they have the same awareness of the world, the same capacity to feel pain, the same capacity to feel painful emotions, depression, sadness. And you can tell, like, if you've ever had a dog, you can tell when your dog's bored, lonely, right? Dogs will howl when they're lonely, when they're left alone for hours on end and their owner isn't there. And, you know, pigs are the same way. But you take these pigs and you put them in this pen, and what are you doing this? Because it's cheap, and it makes the meat cheap. And you put them, as you saw in the video, in these little pens, cram them in there. When people do that with dogs, they get carted away for animal cruelty charges. But for some reason, pigs are seen as okay, and it's sort of a cultural thing. In other societies, a pig is an unclean animal, and the person wouldn't think about eating a pig, not because they respect pigs or treat them as pets, but because they see them as abhorrent. So you get all these different sort of cultural superstitions about what animals are okay to eat and what aren't. But if you think, oh, I would never eat a dog, or I'd never eat a horse, or I'd never eat my own, you know, pet dog, it's a kind of inconsistent view to think, oh, I wouldn't eat my dog, but I'm going to eat this cow, or I'm going to eat this chicken, or I'm going to eat this pig. Let's see. I think I'll leave the Swiss Modest proposal and move on. So that won't be it. The Swiss Modest proposal won't be on the test. He suggested the poor eat their babies. Oh, hi. all right. Let's see. You just put that down there. So, pro-meeting argument. So this is Ralston, Holmes Ralston. Has an article there, and he says it's, you know, eating meat is natural, and therefore it's morally okay. What's natural is what's good. He also says you look out in nature, you know, red in tooth and claw. Animals eat other animals. And so why you shouldn't think about human beings as existing outside of the ecosphere. You know, human beings are part of nature. And so therefore, it's perfectly natural for them to eat animals. We're part of the food chain. We're just at the top of the food chain, and so we eat animals just as animals eat other animals. Are we to go in there and try to keep animals from eating other animals to stop the suffering? He also says animals are incapable of moral action, and so therefore, they're undeserving of moral consideration. So it's the idea that animals don't have the capacity for appreciating moral qualities. So therefore, they're not deserving of moral consideration. And we talked about this a few minutes ago. It seems like you can point to lots of examples of human beings. They can't take care of themselves. They can't make rational judgments. But we wouldn't say, oh, you could torture them for fun, or that you could eat them. Going back to, you know, Jonathan Swift. And he also argues that we're the dominant species. And so this seems to be a kind of a weak, might makes right argument. Going back to the alien analogy, it seems like, again, is sheer power, is that what makes, you know, things right and wrong? This idea that eating meat is natural. You know, is everything that's natural good or morally justified? You might argue that, say, rape is natural, right? So you have human beings, a man who wants to have sex with a woman. The woman is not able to defend herself. She says no. And the man is physically stronger. If there's no one there to protect her, it seems like he could just take what he wants. Is that morally okay? Well, most people would say in a civilized society that's wrong. Why is it wrong? Because he's causing needless suffering to her for his own trivial pleasure. She's going to have psychological effects, maybe some bad physical effects. She might end up with a child that she has to take care of. and she's going to, you know, suffer emotionally and psychologically. And what's he going to get? He's going to get a few minutes of pleasure, right? So think about eating meat, right? You're eating that burger, and there's an animal that, you know, suffered years in a factory farm and died so you could have that hour of pleasure or whatever, 15 minutes, depending on how fast you wolf it down. So that seems like, again, kind of a weak argument. There are other things that are natural. You know, someone insults you, you know, socking him in the jaw, that's natural. To fight aggression with aggression, to... So there are a lot, war. You might say war is natural to human species. That doesn't mean that we shouldn't take steps to try to minimize or reduce war and hostility. So there are lots of things, you know, being lazy, following the path of least resistance, being ruled by your emotions, reacting instead of being proactive, eating too much, you know, being just... You probably think of a host of things which are natural for human beings. That's just sort of the way, the default mode that human beings operate in. But there are things that civilization and reason and morality have tried to control and reduce to make the world a better place. Oh, here's the few pictures, nature, red in tooth and claw. So here's a lion on the savannah eating a zebra. And here you can see, you know, this is sort of what happens in nature. And what Holmes Rawson would say is that, or Holmes Rawson III, I guess. So he would say, look, this is it. This is nature in operation. And so, you shouldn't think there's anything wrong with this. This is just the way things are. It's the natural order. And human beings are not doing something wrong by participating in the natural order. So what he says is that eating animals is a part of nature or ecology. And he wants to distinguish this from preying on other human beings. So he says, you know, I'm going to give you a view that says it's okay to eat animals, but it's not okay to kill your neighbor and take his stuff. Or to, you know, rape a woman. Or to assault an innocent person because you're angry about how things turned out today. And so on. So he says... while eating animals is natural, that's part of ecology, killing or harming persons, human persons, is part of culture or morality. And he says there's a hard, fast distinction between what you do to other human beings and what you do to animals. It's natural to eat animals. It's not natural to harm people. It seems like kind of a weak argument to me. It seems that it is natural to harm other people. Now, we have rules of morality, which come from our culture and through reason, some of them more reasonable than others, I suppose, about harming other persons. To say that morality is sort of, that morality only has to do with human persons seems to be begging the question. And he wants to say, oh, well, eating animals is just sort of default natural, but harming people isn't. And it seems that harming another person is just as natural as wanting to eat an animal. We have all these base human impulses for food, sex, power over an environment, and also for happiness and pleasure, and to avoid objects of fear. And those are all part of human nature, to try to separate out certain objects of desire, like animal flesh, saying it's okay to eat animal flesh because you desire it and it tastes good and sort of what human beings were meant to eat. But to say, oh, but, you know, raping and killing, that's like totally unnatural. It seems that it's not, and that it's, those things are wrong, and that culture deals with how human beings treat each other. Okay, so imagine you say, well, culture is how human beings treat each other, and eating animals is part of nature. Well, that assumes that morality doesn't extend to ecology. Again, the long and short of this is that it seems like Rawlston seems to be arguing that simply because it's natural, therefore it's good, or it's morally okay. I imagine, I don't know, suppose there's an inherited proclivity to molest children, and it's natural. Does that mean it's okay? Suppose, I mean, you think of all sorts of things that might be natural that wouldn't be morally permissible. So he also says animals aren't persons, so they can't engage in interpersonal relationships. This is sort of, this dovetails with the second argument, which is that borderline or Twilight Zone cases don't change the class differences between humans and animals. So he recognizes that there are certain animals which have more mental capacity than certain human beings. And he wants to say, well, these are just sort of like odd cases that we can ignore. But it seems like it's significant when you look at, say, you know, a parrot that can read, or if you look at a dolphin, which seems to be communicating, or you look at a dog who's done something he's not supposed to, and he's looking at you with those guilty eyes. I mean, animals have human-like emotions and feelings and sensations, and certainly they experience pain. And so, you know, is it wrong to inflict needless pain? And does it matter if you're inflicting needless pain on, say, an infant who doesn't have the capacity to reason, or if you're doing it to a dog? You know, if you come home and you had a bad day at work, do you kick the baby? Oh, no. Probably not, right? Would it be okay to kick the baby? No. But would it be okay to kick the dog? Most people would say no. Well, if it would give you pleasure to kick the dog because you're angry, most people would say that's still wrong because you're causing pain to the dog for your own pleasure. Well, again, what are you doing when you're eating that bacon? Right? You had because you have this desire for bacon, you've contributed to some animal being cramped in a warehouse someplace and not be able to move, wallowing in its own filth, and being killed and slaughtered for your culinary delight. Now, he makes an interesting case here. He says, look, if we didn't eat cows, pigs, chickens, goats, and sheep, they'd go extinct. Or they'd live feral lives where they'd have at least as much suffering as they'd have in captivity. So, you know, animals starve to death in the wild. And so when you're thinking about, oh, you know, what are you going to do with these factory farmed animals? I suppose you could just eat up the rest of them and then just not breed them. But, you know, if we didn't breed these animals, they wouldn't exist in nature at all. So it's only because we have this desire for them that they exist at all. And even if there were some version of them that existed in the wild, there would be deprivation and suffering. There would be natural predators who would eat them. And they wouldn't be killed with like a bolt gun to the brain. They would be eviscerated like this. They would have their soft underbelly torn apart by claws and fangs. That's not a pleasant way to go. And so what he says is that we should have... get to the end here. Going the wrong way. What he says is that what we should do is just make sure they don't experience more pain than they would have in the wild. So the standard isn't, we can't give them any pain at all, and we can't do anything to them that would cause them pain. That all animals experience pain and deprivation of pleasure. That's why we have pain, right? Pain is a survival mechanism. So only needless pain is bad. So what is needless pain? Well, he says that needless pain means not giving them any more pain than they otherwise would suffer in the wild. So now, the term needless, though, is sort of a slippery term, because, you know, we don't need to factory farm animals, but if we didn't, the price would go way, way up. and meat would become very expensive. So, you know, we want to do it. We don't really need to. You don't need to even eat meat. Why do people eat meat? Not because they need it to survive, but because it tastes really good. Again, there's no medical reason why anyone needs to eat meat. So, so what he says, and he concludes by talking about an example of needless suffering. And he says, you look at the way some religious groups slaughter animals. You have these sort of superstitious rituals where they're taking like a blade and running across the animal's neck and then having it bleed to death. And he says, that's not really necessary. And so if you just have a factory farm and you slaughter the animal with a bolt into the brain or some other painless way, then that's much better to do. And that would be an example, he would say, of causing animal needless pain. But I think he really downplays the suffering that animals face in factory farms. And I think that a lot of the pain that the animals suffer in factory farms is a consequence of wanting to have cheap and readily available meat, which otherwise couldn't be produced. The demand for meat would not be able to be met at anywhere near the price if not for massive government agricultural subsidies for growing the grain to feed the animals, and also if not for these highly efficient industrial forms of production. You have the land that would be required to for grazing all these animals to roam freely for, you know, chicken coops and so on. It would just it wouldn't be something that would be scalable. Oh, I think that's it for vegetarianism. Okay, I think I'm going to leave it there for vegetarianism and take a little break here and move on to discussing the death penalty. No, not death penalty. We did that last time. We're going to do torture. Is it ever permissible to torture another human being, to say to extract information from him, and then talk a bit about gun control.